From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 567, Getting Your Data Ready for Analytics with guest Jen Stirrup, recorded Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio here in 2018. And today I'm talking to Jen Stirrup, who is an industry analyst and speaker, an author, Microsoft Data Platform MVP, a data strategist and practitioner in business intelligence, big data, and data visualization. With more than 20 years' experience, she works with global clients to deliver strategic advice and implementation in data technologies, focusing on R, machine learning, database technologies, and big data solutions. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you for having me. It's great to join you guys again.
Well, we did this the easy way a year or so ago when we were at Ignite, and gosh, you got to sit face-to-face, as I recall, in a closed bar.
Yes, and it wasn't open, which probably says a lot about us, that we were in the bar before it opened, but,
yeah.
But there we are. That's probably another conversation.
That's sort of the nature of Ignite, I think, working all the time, too. But now you're in your office, I'm in my office. We're doing this sort of the traditional remote way, which has its own fun and excitement. And the data analytics industry, I mean, it's been a year since we talked. So much has happened.
Absolutely. So much has happened, I think, both from the business aspect and also from the technical aspect as well. So from the technical aspect, we see Microsoft are doing some really cool things in that space now. So last year when we spoke, they didn't have Cosmos, for example.
Right.
And they also didn't have things like Python and SQL Server. That was just a dream at the time. So actually, the technical landscape has changed quite a bit. But from the business aspect, what I really see is people being even more confused than they were last year. So customers will say to me, I think I've got a big data problem. What technology will I buy to solve it?
Right.
And then they don't really know what they're asking for, I think. So I do see real issues with that. So I think what I'd really like to chat about is, how do people really get started in this area? Because I think when I first went into big data, I fell into it. And the reason for that was I was getting business intelligence problems.
Right.
And data problems that could not be solved with SQL Server. Because at the time, being such a relational database engine, I suddenly realized I have to look at this Hadoop stuff. And the reason for that was just simply customers knowing they had a data problem, but not knowing of the language how to solve it. Now it seems like the pendulum swung the other way. Everyone's telling me they've got a big data problem. And sometimes that can really mean something like, well, we've got a data problem and we don't know how to solve it. But if we call it a big data problem, then that kind of sounds like we know what we're talking about.
Right.
Since we're technical people, we all want to do big data because that's where it's all at.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's just a buzzword now. It's like we've been told we need to have a big data solution of some kind, that it doesn't actually mean anything to them.
Absolutely right. I really think it's almost meaningless. So often I see customers come to me and they will say, we've got a big data solution in mind. And of course, wonderful salespeople will do a wonderful pitch and explain this will solve all the problems in the world.
For sure.
And then the C-level suite will read a big data book, and they'll read half of it because they're busy people. So they read the first half and that will say, big data is great. It will solve all your problems. They don't read the second half of the book, which says, actually, this is pretty tough to implement and to do it well and do it easily and make sure you have effective user adoption across the business. And also that it really solves a business problem, that it actually has business value to add.
Yeah, I guess that is an interesting challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I've found that most data stores in businesses are collecting tabular type data from orders and things like that, and are spitting out pretty typical reports that summarize the data as it was collected, that there's really no analysis beyond that.
That's right. And I think as well, sometimes people say they have a big data problem, and actually what they mean is, we want a relational database that we don't have to look after.
Huh.
They seem to think that big data is so sparkly and shiny, it will look after itself. And that's actually what they mean when you start to burrow around it. So I have to say to people, well, you know, you still have to look after your data. It's not going to do it for you. And I think that's the impression people get. is that big data really does solve all of your problems, and it right. really will solve even down to the skill set. And it's not true. It's not true at all.
Yeah, to me, it seems more like you're adding data analytics to your company, which means you're adding new problems, additional complexity, presumably to provide additional value too.
Yes, that's right. All you're doing is changing the problems mm-hmm. that you have. And when I hear customers ask, you know, we think we've got a big data problem, it really means that they've probably got a relational data problem that they're not solving somewhere.
Right.
And then I'll ask them, so when did you last tune your SQL servers, for example? Have you done any performance tuning? Have you, you know, where is the problem? Is that a new problem? And then you burrow around there and you realize actually they're using existing technology badly.
Right.
So giving them new technology is not going to solve that problem at all.
So the place to really start is to look at what you're currently doing with your data and the infrastructure you've got and see that it's running as well as it possibly can?
Yes. I think what I do is I offer a business intelligence health check. Mm-hmm. And what I really mean by that is identify what your problems actually are. Now, that sounds really simple, but it's actually really hard. Because sometimes the problem is what we call in Europe the 40 centimeter problem. And what that really means is the problem lies 40 centimeters away from the screen.
Right.
And that's the user.
You know, if it wasn't yeah. those darn users, all this stuff would work so much better.
Exactly. That's right. And sometimes those people the problem lie with is actually the IT staff. And it's easier to say we need new technology than it is to say, well, actually, maybe we shouldn't have created maybe 300 databases.
Yes.
They're all doing the same thing, but each one's slightly different.
Right, right.
And that becomes a process thing. I think when people are busy, they tend to look for the least path the resistance when they're trying to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. They just think, you know, I'm just going to put in this software, I'm going to quickly create a table, I'm going to quickly create a view that retrieves this data. But what they don't understand is sometimes you're just creating a whole cottage industry of problems that you need to look after. And then it becomes translated into a technical problem. But actually, the problem lies in process. And then it's easier. It's almost like I'm saying it's a big data problem. It's an excuse. It excuses people from doing things badly. Because they seem to think, well, big data just means it doesn't have a structure, so we will just dump the data somewhere and we'll worry about creating it later. But you have to say, well, actually, to make sense of it, it still needs a schema in there somewhere. We have to make sense of that data somehow.
I guess the old line, garbage in, garbage out, is still applicable.
Oh, 100%.
Wow.
And it just means if you add technology that actually doesn't really solve your problem, it's even more garbage in,
right.
even more garbage out, because people get very distracted. But I think as you know that old saying people used to say, no one ever get fired for buying an IBM.
Right.
No one ever get fired for buying Microsoft. It's almost like that switched into no one ever got fired for talking about big data technology that we need. I do see that. I do really think it sounds like people are innovative. I don't mean to mean so sound so hard on IT staff. I understand they're busy. But sometimes it's so easy just to say to your boss, can you write us a check for new technology, than it is to take a very hard look at what you're doing right now. So one area that I find this is particularly relevant to is actually the cleanliness of the data.
Right.
And there's some really interesting statistics just released, and I'm going to quote some of them for you. But before we do, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Just finger in the air, can you estimate the cost of bad data to a business?
Wow.
In terms of its revenue. I don't know how much you think that might actually cost a business financially. If you can't think of an answer, it's okay, I'm going to give you the answer.
Okay.
The answer, which was done by some research published in MIT's Sloan Management Review, is that they estimate the cost of bad data to be a whopping 15 to 25% of revenue, not profit. Revenue
wow.
from companies. And that was just released this week. And the reason for that is it's not just a financial cost. You can translate productivity losses into a financial cost. So the reason it's so high is that people accommodate bad data simply by correcting errors. They might do it at the reporting level. They might also have to double check the data against another very similar source because they're not sure of its veracity. So that means it's another cost in terms of time.
Sure.
And then you're trying to mix all of this data together. And then you're just compounding errors as well. So the reality is that fewer errors in data mean lower costs to a company.
Mm-hmm.
When companies start to look at big data solutions, they're not always looking in the right place. They need to ask themselves very carefully, are we just going to make more bad data, because if they are, their investment in big data technology or any other technology, but particularly big data, is going to get swallowed up really quickly if the productivity is bad, or if they're just really putting bad data and getting their bad data and turning it into a big data solution. Bad, still bad regardless of its size or where you put it. So there's four main aspects of that, really. One is to measure the current state of the data quality. And then we need to look at the immediate consequences of the bad data. What do you have to do to clean it up?
Right.
The third aspect of it is the costs. What does it actually cost? And then the fourth thing people need to consider is what do we need to do to get in front of our data quality? So I can tell you some guidelines that I do to measure data quality, because I don't listen to what the customer wants. I listen to what they need. And what they actually need is very different from what they think they want.
Sure.
So I deliver a very hard message sometimes to customers, just simply through this health check to see, actually, I know I've said you can't buy this technology that costs you $3 million because it's not going to solve your problem, but I just saved you $3 million.
Right, by not spending money that wasn't going to help you anyway.
Exactly. And you get a few stunned faces then, because the IT team really wants to buy, I don't know, whatever big technology it happens to be at that moment.
Sure.
And I say, look, you really... your problems are not solved by that $3 million investment, because that's just not the software licenses, it's the technology, it's the servers it's going to sit on.
Right.
So I try and get customers to take a step back. So the first thing I do look at is the current level of data quality. So one example of that can be the completeness of the data.
Mm-hmm.
And the completeness is an interesting metric.
Yeah.
What you have to do is look at... well, not only how much of your data is missing, but a really interesting thing to do is look at what your competitors are collecting in terms of their data. So when you sign up for a competitor's service, what are they asking for? You can do a gap analysis to say, well, actually, they're asking for this. We're not collecting that data, so they must be doing something with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes the data can seem a bit irrelevant. One data point they might ask for is something like, do you drive a self-driving car?
Right.
For most people, that will be no. But actually, over time, you start to get to see people saying yes to that problem. That allows you to measure the adoption of self-driving cars, which also tells you a lot about that individual. Their ability, for example, to adopt new technology.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they have more money as well. So there's things you can draw from that. You can also look at things such as the currency of your data. How current is it? An interesting metric that I like to do is I like to go around the teams and I ask them how many people have actually had to change data this week? How many people have had to correct it? And a very simple metric is to take the number of people that have changed data that week and divide it by the total number of people who can change data.
Right.
And usually you find it first is 100%.
Of course, yeah. Is there also a question there about how they change the data? Like, I'm horrified at the prospect that people are going in and doing manual edits to data in tables because there's no other way to fix an error.
Yes, well, this is a problem that I see. I don't like that. The data lineage really bothers me.
Sure.
I try and do error tables in a data warehouse, and at least people know what the errors are.
Right.
And I just siphon them off to Excel, and I say, look, you have to fix this. Once you've done that, we'll put it through a separate process, and then it will get through the next time. So I'm just finished building a master data management and a data quality solution for a customer. And that's how that works.
All right.
It basically just goes back round again. But one thing one of my customers does, and I love this idea, is they actually measure themselves in data quality. They've made it part of the strategy as an organization.
And so what's the metric then? Is it how often they have to correct?
What we've done there is we've taken a whole bunch of metrics and rolled them up. So you can take all sorts of metrics and build a dashboard out of them and then start to roll up the metrics. So we can start to say things like, so how current is our data?
Mm-hmm.
When then we can look at how much of it is actually out of date is a different question to ask for. And some of that is simply just looking through the columns and just trying to work out, actually, this column never gets updated, or this one gets updated once a year.
Right.
You can also look at things like the completeness as well. I start to look at that and say, well, actually, we are missing so many columns of data that we're asking for. Or so many rows.
People are not populating certain fields.
Yes.
Right.
And that's not a big data problem. That's just a data problem. I think people see it as a structure problem. We're missing this data, so we'll put it in a big data solution. And actually, that's not going to help.
That's not going to help at all. Hey, Jen, give me one moment here to pay the bills. This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in SQL Server 2016 and 2017. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, March 25th to 28th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at SQLintersection.com, and we'll see you there. And we're back. You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell, talking to Jen Stirp about getting your data actually ready to do some analytics. And if you don't mind, I would like to jump back a little bit. We're talking about that scenario where it's, hey, we have 300 databases, which, again, path of least resistance for a DBA. When a new application is introduced into the organization, we just stand up another database rather than try and share anything. And my big fear in something like that is just sheer volume of duplication of data.
Yes, and it's duplication of data, and it gets worse. Actually, it proliferates through the whole organization.
Because people
then dump that data to Excel.
Right.
And then they change it a little bit, and then they send it to their friend in another department. And then they make a copy, you've got a copy, you put the copy in the network, so you end up with maybe at least 4 copies, and then it gets sent around. So you end up with these horrible daisy chains of reports, where you've got reports with Excel data, then more Excel data as people mash the data. I think you're going to find it really hard to get business users out of Excel. And the reason that they do it is because they don't know what business questions to ask.
Right.
So if you ask a business user what they want, they will say, give me all of the data for the past 5 years. And you might say, well, actually, that's 170 columns for the past 5 years. And they'll say, right, so we want all of that data, and we want to be able to print it, and we want it all in one page.
Can you put this 10-pound pile of stuff in that 1-pound bag, please?
Yes, exactly. So I have to say, well, you know, I'm finding a way of busting your bubble over why that's not a good idea.
Right.
So then you say, well, how do you print that exactly? How's that going to look? How many columns do you normally get in a page? And then they start to drop.
Right.
So I do see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they don't know they're asking for everything is because they don't want to be confined to anything.
Sure.
So I tend to see business questions very much in terms of two different ways of looking at them. So you get the business puzzles, and the business puzzles are questions where you have a very definitive question with a very definitive answer. That answer does not change. The answer does not change depending on the technology.
Right.
So your question could be, tell me the sales in this area for this period of time. And then regardless of whether you use Excel or reporting services, you get the same answer.
Mm-hmm.
So those are static reports, your sort of bank account style of reports. But then you get business mysteries. And those are the questions which business users are really trying to answer. But the problem is they can't formulate the question, so it's not well-defined. And they don't know what the answer might be, so you don't even have a well-defined answer.
Nice.
So you get this distinction between business puzzles and business mysteries. And when customers are asking for big data analytics, they're trying to solve those business mysteries rather than trying to take a bit of a step back and wonder, what is it we really want to know? And I think when customers sit down and tell me what they actually need, sometimes they need business puzzles, and those can be solved by simply using static reports. They just don't have the data they need. Or you can start to get business mysteries. And that's where the business really can take advantage of big data. Because sometimes those can be where your big data analytics really start to come into play. But to do that, your data's got to be right first.
Sure. And I wonder if we can make more concrete examples around this. I get it. But to me, then a business puzzle is more like how much we sold in a given month.
Exactly. And a big data mystery might be an example of customer churn. So customer churn wants to know things like, why did a customer leave us?
Right.
And why did they go somewhere else? And where did they go? So an example of that might be a manufacturer who sees that people are leaving and choosing a different device. So then they can start to wonder and ask the questions, which device did people start to use once they left us?
Mm-hmm.
And why did they do that? But they don't really know always the reason is because of the device. The first question they have to ask is, why are people leaving us?
Right.
And they don't know why that is. So they don't get to the next question, which is, why did people choose another device over us? So what they need to do there is really click and tick the data. To crunch through the data to produce the answers to that can be quite hard. So the idea there is by giving them a good big data store with a good query that they can start to really click and tick the data on their own and make it simple for them to get the answers that they need. Because the business mysteries ones are not ones which you can define very easily. Basically, it's good to give them as much data that they can surface as possible.
Because I think the basic description of a business mystery like this, why do we have as much customer churn as we do, is a fairly easy question to articulate it. Answering it seems much more complicated. There's a lot of different ways to tackle that problem. And I wonder how many times it's just, I have to go collect more data.
Yes, I do see that. Often customers will say, actually, I need a different data store. Mm-hmm. I need to bring that in. Or I need these other two data stores. I'll go and bring those in. Yep. And that's where big data solutions free you to start to look at different data sources. And I think that's what's quite nice about it.
So that is the strength of these new models, is that they're quite adaptive to bringing new data sources in.
Yeah, that's right. So something like Microsoft have a solution called HD Insight, which sits in Azure. What I love about HD Insight in particular is that you can really have the whole Microsoft ecosystem as part of that.
Nice.
So HD Insight is really a Hadoop-based big data solution. And so what that really means is people talk about Hadoop, and I see Hadoop as being like a big data attic. So basically, it's a place to shove your data until you need it, and then you can go and get it. And so what's nice about that is you can put the data in there that's in different formats, and you can play around with it a little bit. But what you're really doing is there's always a cost in these systems, and there's the cost in those sort of solutions is at the point of the query, because you have to shape the data, you have to work out what you need to get it. So I think what we will see in the future is big data preparation, where people have to prepare their data and they have to try and clean it, put it together and understand exactly what they need,
right,
and how to join the data together. That's a big skill, and it's something that a lot of data scientists end up doing. There is a statistic that says they spend 80% of their time collecting, preparing data before they analyze it. And I know it seems like a big waste of time, but sometimes
Sure. It's
just the nature of the data that you've got.
And does this have to be done before we can even really ask questions? Or is it only once we start asking questions that you start understanding what data needs to be clean?
So what I do is I try and start by visualizing the data.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I talk about cleaning data, it's hard. People are not interested.
Right. It seems so unromantic. Like, this is the last thing I want to do. It's like janitorial work. It's cleaning.
Absolutely. And who wants to do that, right?
Yeah.
No one wants to be the data cleaner, and they want to do the fun stuff. So it becomes more relevant as well, because big data and HD Insight, for example, they're not standalone technologies,
mm-hmm.
and they're not just another way of producing queries. They actually fit with a whole bunch of other things. And I think customers get a bit confused because they think, well, actually, I'm just going to put my data in my data attic and I'll be able to get it back again really easily. But actually, particularly in Azure, there's so many moving parts, and it's great that you've got so much choice. It absolutely is. So if you've got data and you want to store it in Azure, for example, you could store it in HBase, which is a Hadoop format, or you could store it in Azure SQL Database, which is basically like SQL Server that sits as actually database as a service. You can go and put your database in the cloud. You can also use SQL Server, which is part of that suite. You could run that on a virtual machine. And you could also use other solutions as well. You could use Redis Cache, for example. You can use that in Azure, all these great things. So all of these are great, but customers look at it and they think, gosh, I don't know where to start. And so suddenly data sources start to become a bit more difficult to choose. And then we need to start querying them as well.
Right.
I think what's really interesting about it is there are some tools out there that will help you to query the data. So I think what's important with that is it's really trying to make it as easy as possible for users in order to do that. And I think there's all sorts of really interesting data sources that you can use. So you could use things like Clickstream data.
Right.
So Microsoft have got a solution for that. And the interesting thing with that is you can really work out what your users are doing when they hit your websites.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, usually in those solutions, there's so much data. It's difficult to go in and analyze it. And that's why it's not great for a relational store. So once you start to understand a bit more about what people are doing on your website, you can start to mash the data together. And that's where your big business mystery starts to come in. Because you can see, okay, so understand a bit better what the users are doing.
Right.
But why did we see a sudden spike there? Is, was it to do with a sale, or was it to do with a marketing outbound email that went out? So we can start to try and look at what actions or what activities happened around that time. Now, that doesn't mean causation. As you know, causation and correlation are two very different things.
Sure.
But it will never be black and white. But it might give you some ideas of what worked and what didn't work. And there's a few different ways that you can do that, really, in Microsoft example. Microsoft partners with Hortonworks.
Mm-hmm.
So Microsoft partners with Hortonworks in order to deliver some of these Hadoop-based big data solutions. So they are really built in open source components. And the Microsoft and the Hortonworks engineers work together. Now, it used to be the case that organizations got a bit concerned about open source. They didn't trust it.
Yeah.
And then it seemed to be that everybody went all open source.
Yes.
But of course, there was a bit, has to be a balance somewhere, because customers started to realize, actually, we need the security of a proprietary system, but we also want to use open source as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's nice about Azure in particular, is it allows you to have a really nice, comfortable space where you can have both of them. So, for example, if you're looking at the Hortonworks data platform, for example, you get different solutions. So the Azure one sits in the cloud, sits in Azure. So you can also use Hortonworks, for example. You can have that in Windows. Some people can't put data in the cloud for various reasons. I remember reading that Portuguese banking data could not leave Portugal, for example.
Right.
So it has to stay in a Portuguese data center. So there's all sorts of legal reasons. They've also got the Microsoft Analytics platform system. So that's really an interesting combination of massively parallel processing engines, and that sits in the Microsoft Parallel Data Warehouse. And that really uses Hadoop-based big data technologies. So it really uses some really interesting technology Microsoft have devised. It's called Polybase, and it's really a connectivity mechanism. Integrates the engine with the Hortonworks data platform, and it can also use other technologies as well. It can use things like HD Insight. So what you start to see is these big data sources starting to knit up together. And that's great, but really to get started, I really suggest customers just start small. Just pick one data source and get comfortable with that before starting to try and use too many of them.
And is that first data source really going to typically come from a relational database, or would it be more likely stuff like the web logs you were talking about?
I think web logs are a good place to start, actually,
mm-hmm.
because every company has them.
Right.
And you can do that in different ways. You might, if you want to do something like Elasticsearch and Kibana. Kibana is a really nice tool that visualizes the web logs for you. It's a good way to get started. It's one way I get started, actually, was looking at those. Because then it becomes a search problem. Because usually, some marketing question might be something like, what happened between 12 and 1 o'clock this morning
right.
on the website? And actually, that's tons and tons of data to try and look through. So it's things like they take what might be a business question and turn it into a search question. And then when you turn it into a search question, you can use different technologies like Elasticsearch in order to identify that.
Yeah.
Microsoft have also got their own version called Azure Search. So there are different options. So I think the choice of big data solutions is very much determined by the skill set of the organization. And that's one key thing that I look at when I recommend software to customers. I really want to take people on a path to success. And if I give them something that's too far away from where they are right now, it's almost like you're baking a big cake. It's just going to fold in the middle.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you've given them too much.
Well, and I've seen that with data analytics projects before, where they just get so mired down that, you're right, the center of the cake is soggy.
Absolutely. And the thing is with analytics is it's very, very hard to provide a return on investment statement for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't see if you invest this much in HD Insight, for example, then you're actually going to be able to get all of this money back and more with all these wonderful analytics we're going to find. I'll give you an example which always tickles me about big data. It's about, I think it was the US Army, actually. They used solutions in order to build a neural network. And this neural network was going to be adaptive. It was going to identify if a tank was missing or present in a scene.
Okay.
So, and you think, okay, that sounds good. You know, we can identify the tank is in the trees or that there's not one there. So they gave this neural network pictures of a tank there, a tank not there. And the neural net performs magnificently. It was outstanding. So then they thought, okay, so we've done our training set. Now let's do our test set. Then the neural net failed miserably, really badly. The reason for that was they're taking the pictures at different times of day. So the neural net actually was identifying if the picture was lighter in tone or darker in tone.
Wow.
So it turned out the pictures they'd taken of the tank were during the day, but the ones taken without the tank were taken a bit later in the day. And all it was identifying the light intensity in the pictures. So sometimes the things you get out of your analytics or your neural net are not what you expected.
Sure.
And with these sort of examples, it's quite tough to then identify return on investment. But at sea level, people tend to think, well, everyone's doing it, so I should do it as well.
Yeah, no, I've read it in CIO magazine. I got to do it.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to read the bit that's written by a vendor that says that this is really easy and I can do it in a week.
Sure. And just send us the money and everything will be fine. Jen, how do you know when your data is clean, when it's worthy of doing good analytics?
I think it's a matter of looking at it and thinking, is my data good enough?
Right.
So I think I tend to try and get to a point where it's almost like 80-20.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I do ask customers is, how many data records do you produce a day that are bad, and how many are you solving a day to make them good?
Right.
And that's a really difficult question because customers, they don't actually know usually. But when you ask people to track how much bad data they've seen in a day, and then you can start to look at the inbounds data from the marketing, from the website, and actually some of that data comes in bad.
Sure.
And then you see, well, how many records did you fix today? And you might say, well, actually, we fixed 10 records today, but we produced 100 bad ones.
Sure.
And we do that every day. So people just get further and further behind. So we try and get them into an even keel of saying, okay, so let's get to the point where you are producing. You're still producing bad data because that's life, but you are getting on a par of resolving that data as well. Because if you tell me that you are only sorting 10 records a day, but producing 100 bad records a day, you're not winning.
No, your system's only going to get worse over time. So, and I guess part of this has got to get into, does it make sense to fix it after it's collected, or does it make sense to repair the collection process so it's correct coming in?
I think a bit of both. So I usually start off with customers and say, look, you know, I think you need to hold your hands up here and just go and get that database. Say it's a marketing database. Go and get that cleaned. Come back to me when it's done.
Right.
And we're going to talk about processes after that. Because marketing data, at least I can say it's customer sign-ups or something like that, I can put some of that on ice almost,
mm-hmm.
and then we get the database back. So it's nice trying to take that sidestep and then start to get people to look at the new thing. And once they do that, I think it gets a bit interesting because it's almost like people have to be careful what they wish for.
Sure.
Because sometimes if they say, all right, the problem's dirty data, and you hear this again and again and again from the staff. So when we know the data is clean, I like to ask people at that point, what are they going to do with the data that's cleaned?
Mm-hmm.
I like to try and get them to implement processes. Hopefully they've thought about them. I try and get them to think about it beforehand of trying to get the data clean, because it's not a tick box exercise. It's something they have to keep looking after. So there's a few different ways of doing that. One way I do try and explain to people is to say, well, why don't you just take a bunch of records randomly? And when you've taken the data and looked at it fairly randomly, take so many samples and just work out as a spot check how many of those have been produced and how many have been produced badly.
Right.
And then at least you can go and start to solve the problem. One of my customers, I'm recommending to them that they start to measure people on their data quality at the point the data is taken in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they started to realize they had a data problem. So they started to say, right, so we're going to start to incentivize people by getting them to fill in all of the data points.
Right. Collect more data.
Yeah, collect more data and incentivize them in that. But what they didn't realize was they're actually just incentivizing them to create any data.
Yes, fake data.
Yes, fake data. Yeah, like fake news.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting that there's so many different ways that data can be wrong. And it'll never be 100%, but it is about getting good enough. And so one way to do that is just spot checking. But it's a good health check of the organization overall. And so once they've done that, usually I find when customers ask about big data technologies, they've usually got a solution in mind. They've already downloaded something from vendors. But I think it's a bit about taking a bit of a step back to say, what problem are you trying to solve? What's the business value you expect from this? And how are you going to test it? Because something I think people forget is actually This isn't just about developing a big data solution. You need to test it as well. And I don't know if you see this in the software world, but I often see that testing is squeezed to the end. It's done by people who built it.
Right.
And it's never a good way to do it when it goes out in the wild. So I do try and do myself 50-50, 50% development time, 50% test.
Right.
Are the numbers what you expect? You need to sense check it even. So one of my customers, I'd started to do a big data solution for them. Just a very small proof of concept. And they asked me to do some customer analytics, just very basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, good, I'll do that. It's very simple. And then I realized the characteristics of the customers were children that were 10, that were living in Afghanistan, and they were male. And I looked at it and I thought, that's not right. So I went to the customer and I said, you've got this big data solution I've been building for you. But what I've done is I've noticed that the data just doesn't look right. You've got 10-year-old children from Afghanistan as being the main customers. That makes no sense.
That's weird, yeah.
It's very weird. So they said, well, let's check the website. So I looked at the website, the web form you filled up, and sure enough, it was actually the data problem was being generated at the website. So the defaults were all male, Afghanistan, and the birthday was 10 years ago.
Right. So it's actually blank data.
That's right. So blank data, the customers were not required to fill these things in, so they didn't. And of course, they defaulted to the first element. So that's a web design form. It was not anything to do with the big data solution.
Sure.
But of course, because it was evidenced in the data solution, the people came back, you know, the IT team came back and said, there's something wrong with the big data solution then, because that data's not right. I have to double prove it, you know, to say, well, actually, I can show you again and again, this is where it's emanating from. It's one of these situations where you have to solve a problem to prove it's not you.
Right.
And I'm guessing that's something your developers listening to will very often feel the pain of being in that situation.
Well, it's true of any reporting. You are the end of the chain. So every mistake made before you affects your result, and yet you are still blamed.
Yes, absolutely. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, it's a very, very typical scenario, I think, to fall into and challenging no matter what. I want to grab one last thing as we wrap up today. How much of this exercise of cleaning the data is educating yourself about your data versus actually making changes to the data?
There is a lot of that as well. Mm-hmm. So some of it is really surprises springing out of the data that customers did not expect. So when I show them things in their data they didn't know, there's two responses usually. Sometimes they love it,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes they absolutely hate it.
Sure.
So I have to say to them, this is part of your big data an analytics process. You're going to find things that you don't like. You're also going to find things which don't make sense until you look at them through the lens of the business. But you need to keep asking those questions before they get to be correct.
Right.
And I think it's part of being a data-driven organization that actually you're prepared to look hard for things. If you're not prepared to look hard at those questions and be prepared to find answers you don't like, then people should just stay as they are.
Sure.
And not do any of the analytics. But what they have to consider then is if they're not looking at their data in that way, their competitors probably are, and they'll just be standing still. And so what happens is there's a bit in Alice in Wonderland, and Alice in Wonderland is trapped under the tree, and she's running under the spot and she can't move. And the Red Queen says to her, you know, why are you running in the spot? And she says, well, actually, I'm running in the spot so I can stay in the same place.
Right.
And I think businesses are like that as well. They're going to be running in the spot to stay in the same place if they don't really start to try and get hold of their data. And there's a few interesting ways that you can start to plan for a solution. So I'll just summarize those quickly. First of all, to be absolutely honest, is big data the right solution for the organization? You need to think about what your requirements are, what the load is. You have to think about how you're going to evaluate those results and how you're going to query those results in the first place. And I think also the second thing is really determine what your analytic goals actually are. What is it you hope to achieve? It's not a matter of putting in HD Insight and expecting, say, a huge return on investment. You have to be very careful about the questions you're asking.
Sure.
And how you're going to measure the success of those. Another thing to identify is source data. So I find customers are not always very honest with themselves what the source data actually is. And the reason for that is it's hidden in Excel, usually, and it's in people's email.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised. If you switched off Excel tomorrow, businesses around the world would absolutely collapse. It's as simple as that.
Right.
Because it's running so many things. So I think people need to do a very careful survey of what the data sources actually are and be very honest about that.
Yeah, and just acknowledge that there's quality here or there's not.
That's right. It's about being very honest, and I think that's part of it, is being really honest about the analytics process from the start. And the customers find that hard because it's very difficult to admit you've made mistakes.
Sure.
Like what I do is I go in and suck up some of the poison around those mistakes to try and make it better.
But it's also the big energy from being an external person, just be able to say, hey, this is normal. Everybody makes mistakes in this area. Everybody collects data inaccurately. Everybody has holes in data. That's totally normal.
Absolutely. And I do try and reassure customers about this to say, look, you know, I see this every week.
Mm-hmm.
I feel lady doctor sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reassuring people. And I have to say, look, you know, I've been in IT 20 years.
Sure.
I've never seen a company with perfect data ever.
Ever. Ever, ever. That's the absolute truth, Jen. And, you know, the best you can hope for is you're trying to get better. And I deeply appreciate this idea that you can't be successful with this further down the path sort of end of line data tool if what's coming behind it isn't good quality. So you've got to have a mechanism for perpetually improving quality if you're going to be successful here.
Yes. And the truth is data projects never end, regardless of whether they are big data or not.
Yeah. No matter what name you put on them.
Yes.
They never, ever end. That's a great place for us to end, though, because I think it's a very compelling thought. Jen Stirrup, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.